Former Governor Mike Rounds is here, and as you know, he's a Republican nominee for U.S. Senate, and it's great to have you back in our studios
again.
Thank
you very much. I'm fine, thank you. It's been good. We've been on the trail. You know, I was just thinking about that. I wonder what the EPA is going to do to find somebody in Canada for these forest fires that are adding to climate change.
You are among those who've been critical of the EPA. I know it made it tough for farmers and ranchers. We'll talk about that.
They're still on it, and they're going to make life miserable for people in South Dakota. That's their intention. They think they know better than the folks that live here how to keep our streams clean and how to keep our air clean. And yet, when you go back to where they live, you find out they're the ones that have got the problem. We don't.
I'm just fascinated by this trip you just took to Texas. You were down in McAllen, Texas.
Yeah, it's the second time I've been down in that part of the country. You know, part of the campaigning is you're going out and you're meeting people that have an interest in the United States Senate from around the area. And when you get in there, some of the added benefits of trying to raise resources is that they want to talk to you about, the reason why they want you there is because they want you to learn about their part of the country. And I was in Laredo last year. This year, had an invite to come on down to McAllen, talk to some folks on health care. They're concerned about health care down there in Texas, just like we are in South Dakota. And along the way, one of the individuals who also works there in the medical facilities that we visited and toured is actively involved in community politics down there. And he was sharing with me over lunch that he had just come from one of the centers down there, and they were talking about the folks that are literally coming across the border and what they're doing. This isn't a case of where the people are being picked up. It's a case of where the folks are coming, and literally, if they've got the money to get on the bridge to come across, they're walking right up and turning themselves in, saying, "Hey, I'm here. I'm in America now. You know, where's my bus pass?"
Right.
And at the same time, if they don't have the money to get through the cartel stops on the south side, who basically control access to some of the bridges coming across, then they take the less expensive way, which is that they find someone who will get them across on a boat, which is more dangerous. You know, floating across on a raft or something. And then they come across and they immediately go back out and they look once again for the Border Patrol agents, and they want them to find them and to take them to their facility, give them their bus pass, and then they know that they've got a spot to get out to make connections someplace in the United States where they have family or friends that they can connect with. And that's where the problem is. The Border Patrol agents are there, but they're being inundated with folks who literally are coming in saying, "Please, take me now that I've made it to America." And the sooner we can get the message out that they're not going to leave, that they're going to be held right there, and they're going to be adjudicated quickly, and then they're going to be returned to their home country, the better off we're going to be.
Yeah, and we've got to talk about this, obviously, because we're seeing a number of, and I'm sure you appreciate this as a former governor, the number of governors that have come out and spoken on this topic. We'll get to some of your thoughts on that. As well as just this whole situation, how you think we should approach it, because this is quickly becoming a top of mind, the biggest problem being identified by more and more voters is what's happening down on the border. So former Governor Mike Rounds is here. More with him coming up. Former Governor Mike Rounds joins us this morning, of course, running for U.S. Senate. And has just returned from a trip to McAllen, Texas. We were talking about it shortly. I'm just fascinated by maybe fascinated isn't the right word. I'm very alarmed by this whole border crisis and what's happening there. You know, as you were down there witnessing this firsthand, Mike, what are the things you really came away with from all that?
That the more that we learn about it, the less the rest of us really know about it in the rest of the country. The folks that are on the border that are living with it every single day, they've got their own opinions about what needs to be done. Part of it is to share the message that the reason for this current crisis is because of the change in policy at the national level, where the message is being sent back to folks that literally just want a better life for their families, that if they get to the American border, they can turn themselves in, and they immediately get the opportunity for a period of between 30 and 90 days in which they can go any place they want. And they've got to show up for court then if you can find them. And that means they've got hope to get someplace in the United States. That message has got to be changed. And you know, once again, I'm not an expert on the border. And each time I go down there, I find out a little bit more about it. But I get the same message from the people that live it every day. And that is the people that are coming in right now. They're coming in and they think that if they get here, because of the current administration's point of view, that they're going to be allowed to stay here long enough to where they can basically disappear into our society. And for them, that means hope. The only way it's going to change is for the president and the administration to send a powerful message that if you get here to the border, and you've used your life savings to get here because you're paying people to get you here. We're still going to stop you at the border. You're not going to go any farther. We will adjudicate you very quickly, and you're going to be put right back on an airplane or a bus, and you're going to be sent back to your home country. And very quickly, this is within a matter of days. And once that word gets out, that the only change for these folks will be that they've lost what little savings they've got on their trip up, then that flux of people coming from Central America will start to slow down. And that seems to be the consensus in that part of the country. I mean, they have a huge amount of compassion down there for these kids. And
I think a lot of us do. Yeah. I mean, you can't, you watch that and your heart goes out.
But you can't fix the problem in Central America by simply saying, come up here to our borders and come on through as undocumented individuals that are coming into our country illegally, and that we're going to allow you to stay. That can't be allowed to continue on.
So as we talk about Congress then and long-term immigration reform, what would be a legislative approach to some of these problems?
I think there's a couple of items. Number one, for anybody that says, well, you know, we don't need immigration reform, I think you're wrong, because we've already got over 11 million people here that are here illegally today, and I don't like that. So, number one, any kind of immigration reform starts out by saying nothing happens until we actually strengthen our border security. In some cases, it means a fence, but in a lot of cases, it means being able to respond quickly with the right kind of personnel to catch people and to send them home again right on the spot. Second part of this is that you've got to reform and fix the borders that are down there right now in terms of access back and forth for people that want to cross legally. And so that if there's trade coming back and forth, that they do it through modern facilities so there aren't these huge backlogs on both sides. The other part is the immigration system that we've got set up right now needs to be reformed so that we bring in the types of people that we need to have come into the country based upon what we think is best for our country. And then finally, you have to address the issue of the people that are here right now that are integrated into our society, that are here and that are not documented. But that doesn't mean you give them amnesty. But it means you do have to address that situation. But that's a ways down the road. First thing you got to do is nothing's going to happen with this administration until such time as those borders actually get the security that they need.
Well, we've
and
got
nobody trusts that this president would take and do it, because if you pass a law, he'll decide which parts of the law that he's going to enforce and which ones he's not. So I really don't think you're going to get a whole lot of really decent reform, because they don't trust each other in Washington, and you can understand why.
Senate Majority Leader Reid tells us the border is secure.
I think he's probably wrong. And once again,
I think you're being kind.
Look, I'm not an expert on it. I've been down there twice, and I haven't spent a lot of time down there, but I've had the opportunity to speak with people who, you know, they don't have a dog in the fight except that they live there. And from their perspective, things are not working the way that they should. They'd love it to go back to the way it was when they were younger, where there was a more casualness about the border itself and people could come across and then go home again. They talk about the times in which they could socialize on the south side of the border and come back through safely. They talk about when people could live on the south side of the border, come up, do work, and then go home again. And that's not happening right now.
We should be looking at guest worker programs and things along those lines?
Yeah, and so that people that we want to allow to come in can do it more easily than what they do today, but to where the border agents aren't being inundated with people coming in and turning themselves in while the bad guys can slip quietly around them and move on, because our Border Patrol agents are being overwhelmed by people who are coming in saying, please, take me right now. I'm here. I've made it to the promised land. And, you know, and they're going and looking for the Border Patrol agents to turn themselves in. In the meantime, the bad guys, they're on the outside. They're not looking to get turned in. But what do you do when your entire staff is inundated with folks trying to turn themselves in?
Well, and now we've got some in the Pentagon saying there's a real national security concern here.
Well, I've heard that. I can't give you firsthand knowledge of that. I don't know that, but you continue to hear that from people, not only on the pundits themselves, on the, you know, on the national stories, but once again, the suggestion is that if someone wanted to get into this country, that would be one of the places where you would do it, because the security down there is being taxed to the limit.
Former Governor Mike Rounds is here. Of course, he's a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, 16 minutes past 8. We were talking when you first started about that you made a joke about the EPA and But I know it's actually no laughing matter what the EPA has done and what their regulations have done and really made life difficult for a lot of, especially of our farmers and ranchers.
That's right. And part of this is they want to redefine the waters of the United States. And in doing so, they want to expand. I believe they want to expand. They claim they don't want to expand it, that it's already there, but most people will disagree. That is, they want to expand the definition of waters of the United States to those waters which occasionally flow into regular streams and rivers. And they also want to include such items as stock dams, stock ponds, and so forth. And their purpose is that they want to now take on traditional ag in America. And this is not a healthy thing for people that raise livestock in the upper Midwest. It's not a good thing for farmers and ranchers here. Look, if we've got problems out here someplace, and if we've got pollution coming into our rivers and streams, we can address it here at the state level. We don't need some bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. coming in here and trying to dictate to us how to do it and to place additional restrictions on farmers and ranchers and how they use their land. And that's what this is coming to. This is control. This is about control and who's going to be able to control the use of our lands in and around riparian areas near our lakes and streams. And I mean, this is a land grab. This is not appropriate. Once again, it's big government. It's bureaucrats who aren't even elected making rules and then redefining rules when they don't like the way the courts have interpreted them, and then trying to say that in doing so, they're not taking anything from the rest of us. They're just doing their job. And I'm sorry, this has gone on way too far. The only way we do this is we stop the bureaucracy in Washington by making Congress do their job, which is saying you're not going to regulate us unless you're an elected official, and then you're going to be held accountable for what you do. I think Rand Paul has a great idea. It's called the RAINS Act. We've talked about it before.
Right.
It's already passed the House of Representatives. And as long as Harry Reid is not retired, you're never going to see it in the United States Senate. But what it would say is we're not going to have any more regulations passed on the people of this country unless Congress approves them if they impact the economy to $100 million or more. Now, there are other alternatives out there as well that might work. But this one is the best we've seen yet in terms of trying to get a hold of the regulatory environment in Washington and literally taking control of our government. Once again, from bureaucrats, never been elected, and yet think they know better about how to take care of our country than normal people that are just trying to make a living in the rest of...
Former Governor Mike, Republican nominee. We're talking about a variety of different issues, and we're just visiting off the air about the budget and Congress getting control of the purse strings. What things concern you?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Congress has got to grab a hold of the purse strings again, and even if they can't balance their budget in the first year or the second year, Congress has got to start passing a budget. I admire Paul Ryan. He had the guts to at least stand up and propose a budget. Now, I can tell you right now, I don't agree with Paul Ryan's budget. I disagree with Paul Ryan's budget. But at least he had the guts to stand up and to put one out in front of everybody. And in doing so, he can begin the debate. But in the Senate, they have to do the same thing. They have to take the budget, and they've got to have the open discussions about where their priorities are and how they move to the point where we actually begin balancing it once again in years. You can't do that until you take the bureaucratic reins out of Washington, D.C., and allow businesses to actually grow and prosper once again. You know, we talk about employment going up in the United States, the unemployment rate coming down. Did you know that in the banking area and in the financial services area, they actually have more employment than they used to have? The problem is it's in the areas of compliance. And the compliance does not create any economic advantage. It takes it away. And so our gross national product doesn't grow because of our increase in employment in the financial institution section. It's a drag on their performance. And yet that's part of the bureaucratic regulation in Congress. So you go back to even what Paul Ryan has tried to do in terms of working on Medicare and Medicaid. I don't necessarily agree with him on those issues either, because I really think that Medicare is something that you've got to be able to protect very strongly and give people multiple options on. Matter of fact, I don't think anybody at the federal level should tell the average American citizen you only have one choice when it comes to Medicare. I like the idea of Medicare Advantage, and yet they're going after Medicare Advantage, which is where you get to go in and choose what type of a plan you've got. You can take the traditional one, which is direct, or you can go back in and you can contract and say, I want to go with a different group of physicians, or I want to go with this particular proposal. It's whatever that person thinks is best for them in their situation. That's a marvelous way to do it. And nobody should be stuck with only one program in Medicare or in Medicare. So I like the idea of multiple programs out there and then allow the average American citizen that opportunity. I think that's probably different than what some people in Washington would like to see, where they're trying to limit the number of positions that you've got available out there. So I think you got to go back to open competition and then decide which one's best for you and your position. The same with people that are in healthcare that are concerned about Obamacare. Obamacare has done things to hurt competition. You have to have patient-centered, you have to have market-driven plans in which the average American citizen can make a reasonable choice about what works best for them in their situation. But focus it on high-quality care for the patient with the families making the decisions. That's not the way the Obamacare model is set up.
And you and I were visiting off the air, and you were sharing your concerns about Obamacare actually drawing funds away from Medicaid.
Yeah, they're using it as a budget offset right now. And so what they're doing is saying Obamacare only costs so much money, but the reason why they're doing it is because under the Obamacare Act, they're actually slowing down expenditures in Medicare, which benefits senior citizens. Now, they can talk about these benefits being great because they're going to have some more money in their trust fund, but the reality is it's because they're not spending the money on seniors. That's wrong. And what they're trying to do, and the way this is set up under Obamacare, folks can Google it. They can Google this number, Section 3403. That's Section 3403 of the Affordable Care Act. And just take a look at what it suggests. It creates a 15-member panel. Sarah Palin called it the death panel. Okay, look, it's better to be called, this is the rationing panel. Because what they do is they have total authority. If Medicare doesn't meet their budget guidelines, that 15-member panel paid for out of the Medicare Trust Fund, $169,000 per individual, plus all the expenses of their committee. And what they do is decide how much money gets paid on a procedure-by-procedure basis and how much they're going to reduce the payments on a procedure-by-procedure basis for certain people because, well, we're not meeting our budget guidelines, so I'm sorry, but you might be over the age of 75. You're not going to get that new knee. You're not going to get that new hip. Or by the way, if you're over another age, maybe it's that pacemaker that, you know, your heart's just wearing out. I don't want a 15-member panel in Washington, D.C. making those decisions for my family. I want the family to make the decision with a doctor and the patient. That's not the way this is set up, and it's coming down that route right now. And as soon as this election cycle is over and the president has free reign once again for the next 2 years, you will see the implementation of Section 3403 of the Act. And then everybody's going to say, well, why didn't they tell us about it? And folks like Representative Pelosi are going to say, well, you know, we had to pass it in order to find out what's in it.
It is 8:29. Former Governor Mike Rounds is here. Let's talk about your grassroots tour kicking off. You're going to be everywhere throughout the state.
We wanted to coordinate campaigns with all of our local Republican officials, all of our candidates. We wanted to bring in the governor, get Governor Dugard and his reelection, Kristi Noem, her reelection. Even Senator Thune is going to come along with us on parts of the trips. And so we're not going to be at every single stop, all of us, but what we wanted is the constitutional officers to have a spot where they can come on in for picnics, where we can go and where, you know, I'm going to do some traveling with the bus and I'm going to show up when the bus is going into different locations. We wanted to hit every of the 66 counties. We're doing it the way it used to be done, where you could go on in, invite, come on in a very casual setting, a comfortable setting, talk about issues that people care about in their own community. And we're going to have volunteers, as we do that, going door-to-door in those communities, checking with them to find out what is of concern to them, finding out who our supporters are, getting them identified so that come Election Day, we've got a great contact list to get the vote out. And that means we'll not only get votes out for our election, we'll get votes out for the governor's election, for Christie's election, and for constitutional candidates' elections and local candidates' elections as well, so that we can continue to have a strong Republican presence in Pierre at the legislative level as well. Teamwork is what this is all about.
What do you think when you see low voter turnout and when you hear people say, you know, I just feel like my vote doesn't matter?
In South Dakota, it really does, and every single vote counts. In the last election, Sioux Falls had a 22% voter turnout in the primary. Now, it rained that day, but still, the rest of the state had about a 33% turnout.
Let me tell you, I was here. There was no reason not to be at the polls.
And you know, we worked hard in Sioux Falls to get the vote out, and we had a good return on the work that we did. But it really is. This is one place in America where your vote really does count, and you can make a difference, not just in statewide races, and you can do it at local legislative races as well. This is a year in which South Dakota's voice on national issues is going to make a difference, because this is the year that we can help to take back the United States Senate. There are 55 people that vote with Harry Reid. We have a chance, if we take back 6 votes that are Democrat right now, we can take back the United States Senate. And if we can take back the United States Senate, we can begin the process of bringing the bureaucracy that is controlling our lives back under control again. It's time we start sunsetting federal regulations. It's time we get rid of the Federal Department of Education. That's 5,000 people at $102,000 a year average salary, and they don't teach anybody. All they do is tell us how we're supposed to take care of our kids. It's time to grab a hold of our own lives again and get it away from unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C.
For people who want to find out more about the Mike Rounds campaign, what can they do?
Roundsforsenate.com is a great way to begin. We're beginning the process of posting out and identifying specific areas that we have an interest in sharing positions on issues and so forth. They can make phone calls in. They can touch base with us. But all the information is on roundsforsenate.com. Meantime, we're going to be out shaking hands, visiting with people, and talking with people one-on-one.
Well, really appreciate you spending time with us here this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You bet. Mike Rounds, and coming up next week, Rick Weiland will be in, and we'll spend some time with him. It's